Here we go. First Sunday of 2020. So I guess it means Happy New Year, everybody. It's official, man. We made it. It's just after 8 o'clock, and you're listening to Fox Sports Radio 98.9 FM and 1340 AM, flagship of the Vegas Golden Knights. I'm Brian Feldman, and this is Out of Line. We're here every week live in the Fox Sports Residential Bancorp studio in Las Vegas. Same exact time, same place. The we includes co-host Caleb Herring, the last UNLV quarterback to lead the Rebels to a bowl game. Caleb is part of the UNLV football broadcast team and the co-host of the soon-to-be Marcus Arroyo Show, along with Russ Langer and Steve Cofield on our sister station, ESPN The Leader. Also here, back from a week off and getting engaged behind our backs.
What?
That's right. Producer Chris Magnum Chapman, who aside from dropping engagements out of the sky...
You didn't even tell us about
this. He moonlights as the locker room reporter for Vegas Golden Knights Radio game day broadcast. We'll talk about that in a minute. And behind the tripod, the best and only intern on the show,
The Wiz!
That's Spencer The Wiz Ostrowski. We want to give him some credit once in a while, so I worked on his name.
I was going to say, I want to give you credit for pronouncing it right. That sounded like you knew what you were talking about.
Right? That sounded not bad.
I'm very impressed.
That was better than when I used to have the faux pas of Peyton Manning and John Elway. I couldn't get it straight for about a year. It was ridiculous.
You should have heard when I played football.
Can you say it again, is the question.
No, I'm not even going to try. Listen, the show is also streaming on the LV Sports Network and seen on Facebook Live. The page is called Out of Line. That's OUTTALINE. And you can watch on our personal Facebook pages as well. As I said, the show's live. And it's also interactive, meaning your calls are welcome. The Fox Sports Residential Bank Corp studio line is 702-876-1340.
Hi, this is Bubby, and it's time for What's on Tap.
Now off to the races. Stevenson all by himself. Coming down the middle. The lefty backhander. He scores! Stevenson in overtime. Knights win it 5-4.
Rebels are going to go to 3-0 in conference play. Walker, long three, no good. Long rebound run down by Hamilton. And that'll do it. Rebels will win it 71-59. They'll win their fourth game in a row. Check that. Fifth game in a row.
Yeah, What's on Tap comes your way thanks to our title sponsor, Residential Bank Corp, with offices locally in Las Vegas and Henderson. Whether purchasing a new home or refinancing the home you already own, Residential Bank Corp is the company to turn to for all your home financing needs. At Residential Bank Corp, we listen, you win. And as you heard, both the Vegas Golden Knights and the Runnin' Rebels won yesterday, and ironically are both on four-game winning streaks. You'll hear from yesterday afternoon's hero, Chandler Stevenson, and two of last night's stars, Marvin Coleman and Amari Hardy of the UNLV Runnin' Rebels. Plus, the first weekend of the NFL playoffs are half over. We'll talk about both the half that has been and the half that's about to be. And we'll give our playoff picks of the week. Our regular season ended, and I'm the champ. So I'm going to gloat in a little while about that, too.
I don't want to hear anything about that.
You're going to. Listen, what's on tap is thanks to Residential Bank Corp. If you're looking to buy a home or refinance the home you're in, choose a company you can trust. At Residential Bank Corp, we listen, and you win.
Hockey players, as you know, are warriors. They don't give up. They come to play every game.
It's time for Nightcap, a cup full of the Vegas Golden Knights. From highlights to interviews to special events, the puck starts here.
Yeah, last night, or I should say yesterday afternoon, on afternoon Saturday, a Sunday game, the Vegas Golden Knights leading their division in the Western Conference, and taking on the reigning Stanley Cup champion, St. Louis Blues, leading their division in the Western Conference. And the Blues have had the Golden Knights number for a bit here, and it sure looked like it was going to start. It was going to be that way again last night. 3-0, the Blues open them up in the first period. Second period ends 3-2. The third period ends 4-4, and the game ends 5-4, Vegas Golden Knights on a Chandler Stevenson, a really, really cool goal. And before we get into it, Mags, I got a chance after the game to stand there. Ed Graney jumped in for a minute, too, with a good question and talked to Chandler Stevenson, yesterday's hero.
And just kind of, you know, the three-on-three adrenaline and just kind of the rush. And obviously just having a little bit more ice, it's kind of not too much stopping and starting, which is obviously different from 5-on-5. There's so much ice, but yeah, just try to keep my momentum going. And I mean, would have been pretty tough to get back if I missed it. So I just tried to do everything I could to get a good piece of it, and yeah, both are free.
Just talk about what that comeback means. I mean, to be able to come back from 3-0 down after one, and then to chip your way back into the game and get it and win it the way you did.
Yeah, I mean, it just gives us some confidence, you know, going forward, and just you know, keep building with how well we've been playing the last two games here in the home stretch. So. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you never want to have that happen, but if it does, you know, obviously, there's a lot of belief that we can come back.
What turned it around? With 82 games was set after last week, is it important to be playoff teams, or is it not? Over 82 games, does that matter, or when you walked off beating them like that, is it a little more important?
Yeah, I think every game is, especially after Christmas. It's kind of, you know, push for the playoffs now. Obviously, leading up to Christmas, you want to try to collect as many points as you can, and after, you know, it's kind of playoff hockey every game from here on out.
It seemed like Fleury's big save really turned it around for you guys. Then, of course, Reeves gets the chippy goal, and it seemed like a different team from that point forward.
Yeah, for sure. Obviously, Flower was huge and stood tall and, you know, was the backbone tonight. So he could have been 5-0 if it weren't for him. So that was huge and obviously gave the guys some momentum and some life.
Max Chandler Stevenson centering what really is the first line. On paper, they put him as the second line, but with Max Pacioretty and Mark Stone on the wings, I mean, that is a very potentially lethal line every time it takes the ice. And Chandler Stevenson, in this case, was a recipient of nothing more than a hustle play, being in the right place, getting the job done, and what a great finish, man. That was a really, you know, if that hockey is indicative of what we're going to see the rest of the way, Chris, this team is not only fun to watch, but they're dangerous now.
Well, yeah, I mean, like I said a couple weeks ago, they needed to prove that they are a consistently good team. And I feel like since Thanksgiving, you know, the last 6 weeks or so, they had that big win in Nashville where Max Pacioretty scored the tying goal with 0.2 seconds to go. And then they end up winning it in overtime against the Predators. From that moment on, they've proven that they are a good team. And the trade in which they acquire Chandler Stevenson is looking like an absolute steal.
No doubt about that.
Because Stevenson has produced more in the 5 weeks or so that he's been with Vegas, probably than he did his entire career in Washington. And now, granted, you could say, well, he's playing between two really good players, but you still have to step up and produce. I mean, it's like an NBA team. When Kobe Bryant was playing with Smush Parker, Smush Parker wasn't an NBA point guard.
We don't want to talk about,
you know,
Smush.
Regardless of who he was playing with.
Smush alone. Yeah, yeah. So he had a hell of a name at least. Yeah. Right?
That's somebody, all he had somebody going looked for him, at that but, child when he was born and thought Smush.
But you know, I mean, you see it all the time, right? You see teams with good with NFL teams with maybe good wide receivers and a terrible quarterback. Doesn't matter how good the receivers are, sometimes you can't
overcome.
Well, you know,
the one thing I was watching, trying to watch Mags, and I'd say he did it about 50% of the time. When you have a line like Pacioretty and Stone are on the line, you're going to be playing against the top line pretty
yes.
much of the other
well,
team.
Well, that's it.
And here's the deal. He was winning 50% of his draws. That's huge to win draws against the top center on another team.
Yeah, he made another big play in that game, too, because he was the one who created the turnover in the defensive zone.
Yeah, he sure did.
That set up Riley Smith's game or go-ahead goal in the third period. You know, Vegas scored four straight goals in that game. Yeah. They looked like they didn't belong
on the
ice. All
their goals were chippy. I mean, Reeves' goal was just so big. But again, Reeves' goal came on the aftermath of Fleury made a couple of incredible saves like he always does. But one save in particular, Chris, that was another one of Fleury's spectacular saves that will go on to his highlight reel. And then after you make a save like that would have put the Knights down 4-0, Ryan Reeves on the other end gets like a slappy-type chippy goal to make it 3-1. And really, you saw the whole momentum. And you know how that is in sports.
Yeah.
One play can change the momentum of everything. And right then, you could feel the entire building shift. The only bothersome thing to me about yesterday's game was how the hell did so many Blues fans get in the building? It was like year one all over again. It bothered me.
Well, yeah, that's just how it happens sometimes. You get fan bases that travel sometimes.
It was bad. I mean, the thing is,
it was ridiculous.
I mean, when St. Louis scored that goal in the third period, when David Perron scored that power play goal, you heard. It wasn't like there were some sporadic cheers.
Right.
I mean, there was a,
roar.
Yeah, it was a roar. And it was.
How many times has that happened though in the past 2 years?
That only happens at UNLV football games
when Hawaii shows up.
I didn't deserve
that. And they're playing
Hawaii
5-0 at the end of the game.
I didn't deserve that at all.
No, you
didn't. I don't know why you did that.
Yeah, you know, I'm just saying.
I was just trying to insert some opinion here.
No, it was.
It's just we have a very strong fan base here.
The first season, Caleb, it was a problem, and even Bill Foley addressed the problem, trying to finagle something to make it harder for fans of opposing teams to buy tickets. He did
try to
pull that off. But here's the thing. It settled down.
Yeah.
And last year and this year, to this point, it seems like it was a normal NHL arena with a home team. Yesterday, it was like, whoa. Now, granted, the Blues did win their first Stanley Cup in like 190 years last year.
You've got all the closet fans coming out for the Blues now.
You
so
do.
The fandom travels better. And what the Golden Knights did, you know, the first year, nobody, and this is what I kind of spoke to, nobody really... There wasn't a large following of hockey in Las Vegas until we actually had a hockey team. So the first year was kind of skeptical. And then with the things that happened October 1 in that first year and then actually having a good team.
You're not Meg. I mean, Caleb, you're exactly right. When they first showed up here, Mags showed up here with a pair of figure skates thinking that was what the Golden Knights were going to wear.
Yeah. Like they were just
Mags is from the East Coast. He actually knows hockey.
A kind of novelty kind of team. Nobody really understood hockey.
No.
And nobody understood how exciting it could be. And then after getting to the Stanley Cup in year one, it's like, oh, here comes
you know
Vegas.
What's funny?
Vegas has fans that will support winners.
Well, you know what's
point
funny?
Blank period. Caleb, it doesn't matter what sport it is. They'll go watch competitive cheerleading if we have a championship team.
If it's
team.
A winner. I was going to say what's funny is, and Chris, remember this the first year. Every time the Knights made a move, like when they got Ryan Reeves, oh, my God, we're going to die. We're finished. This guy is a brute. He beats people up. We're a finesse hockey team that scores goals. And I'm just sitting back. We're getting ready for the playoffs when people start beating the crap out of each other.
And
you got to have a Ryan Reeves on your team to protect smaller players like a Jonathan Marchessault, Jonathan Marchessault is like a chihuahua.
Yeah.
He thinks he's a big guy, and he's not.
He
needs protection, and a guy like Ryan Reeves is there to do stuff like that.
It's a part of the learning curve of getting a team that you're not familiar with. I think we didn't have very educated hockey fans in Vegas at first. And
no.
Guys like yourself and Mags, of course, who actually grew up actually enjoying hockey and know the ins and outs of who's going where, even before the Knights got here, it's like you guys have slowly over the years educated people into understanding what hockey season is about, what playoff hockey is about, and what winning in hockey takes. And I think now that people kind of got an understanding, they should be more supportive of that. I think this season we've seen, I talked about it before the season started, this is probably the first time, it is the first time that the Knights have had to rebuild the roster and kind of make moves that are major
really
and seem
point.
Very different, because the inaugural year it was like, this is your team.
Caleb, it's a great point. Chris and I, walking out of the game yesterday, I said to Chris, I go, you know, I'm looking at the 20 guys, because you dress 20 players per game. And out of the 20 players that dressed yesterday, 8 of them were not on the roster when they went to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Big.
2 years ago.
That's big in any sport.
Now, granted, you had some guys that were scratched. You had Cody Eakin, John Merrill, and Marchessault were scratched yesterday. But still... 8, that's half of your team is not the same team of just 2 years
and
ago.
And that is universal throughout any sport. The
100%.
Chemistry of a team, how to win with a team. And that, so this
plug
season,
and play.
Plug and play. That the season that started off and everybody was pushing the panic button. Oh, we suck now. We're not going to make the playoffs. We're not a playoff team. We're no good. In any sport, when you put together a roster, it takes a while for it to fit together and start to work. And what I'm hearing from that interview and just watching the Knights and how they, you know, they're protecting their home ice. How do you say it? Home ice, is that?
Yeah,
is
home ice.
Home ice.
Exactly.
Okay,
you sound like you have hockey knowledge.
Look at me learning. I'm learning. But they're protecting their home ice the way they're supposed to do. And, you know, like just like in basketball, you get to that mid-season point, and like you said there in the interview, the playoff push, it's starting to get the games matter. Everybody's trying to push for a place, and they're sitting on top of the division now. And that seems like a winning team that knows how to do it, that's been there before. Whether or not all the guys are there, the organization itself understands that you're going to go through lumps during the season. It's a long season. But you got to get it together in the right times. And after that midway point, the playoff push, when you got home ice, you got to protect it. That kind of thing matters. And I think the Knights understand it. And look where they are now. They're looking like a playoff team.
Yeah, and they won their last four games all at home, and they're on a seven-game home stand.
Two more home games.
We talked about three more. We talked about how big that was, and they'll be this week. I'm going to be there again next Saturday, checking out to play William Carlson's old team, the Columbus Blue Jackets. That should be a decent game. And Tuesday night, the Penguins come to town, and Fleury, Marc-Andre Fleury, always gets up. And that's what Mags, segueing into this, that's what I was going to talk about. Isn't it? Is it just irony, or is there some little extra juice? But whenever you see a player play his old team, and Caleb, it's not just in hockey, it's in any sport.
Yeah.
When you see a player play their old team, they get a little bit more juiced up, and they score. Because yesterday is indicative of what I'm saying. When you had Perron gets 3 points, he assists on the first two and scores the third goal. The former Golden Knight gets three out of the out of the four goals, he's a part of three of them. And then on the other side, the St. Louis Blues, Paul Stastny and Ryan Reeves both get in on the scoring too,
right,
and score goals as well. What is with that, Mags? Is that because we do see that a lot? We just saw that recently with we see that with Pierre Belmar. Every time he comes to town, he scores goals against us.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird thing, right? I mean, and you would think Ryan Reeves, I mean, he hadn't played with the Blues for a couple years. Paul Stastny as well. Obviously, David Perron, he's 2 years removed from playing for the Knights. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of a cool thing. And I think, honestly, the love affair with David Perron is over between the fans. Because, I mean, he played a chippy game yesterday, and he wasn't too happy with the way the Golden Knights played, if you read some of his quotes after the game. But
I was going to ask you, do you think, like, when he skates by Flurry, when he puts one in past me, he says something in French?
The first time he scored.
He starts MFing him in French.
That nobody would understand.
It was the first time he's ever scored on Flurry. So for him, it was a big deal. And him and Flurry before the game kind of shared a little bit of a
some
game.
French pleasantries.
Yeah, a little moment where Perron, while he was doing his warm-ups, waited till Fleury was the last man on the ice, and he sent the puck down to Fleury, and Fleury batted it off his stick. But
did they split a croissant?
No. That's French, not French-Canadian. I don't think they do croissants in Montreal. But, yeah, I mean, it's kind of a weird thing that Perron comes back to score 3 points, but I think at the end of the day,
and Reeves, I mean, he gets 5 goals in the season, and he scores one of them.
There's something about playing against your old team, and it's like you said, it's all sports. I know Charles Barkley and Shaq always talk about it, like when they got traded from a team or go back and play their old team. There was an understanding that, hey, I'm going to show out this game. Your current teammates now know. I think it has a lot to do with how you left the team, whether you were traded on bad terms or not signed to a deal you thought you deserved. Things like that happen behind the scenes where you kind of are bitter about it, so you want to really punish your old team. So, I mean, it is interesting. People definitely get up when they play their old team.
Well, and you listen to people. I mean, the funny thing was is you were hearing Reeves was talking during the first intermission that they were interviewing him, and we see him up on the screen in the media room. Then Mags, I don't know if you saw when he was talking, and he says, you know, they talked about playing your old team. He says, I hate losing against my old teammates. He goes, there's nothing worse than
they know you.
Because they ride you.
Yeah, they ride you when they beat you.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's like, there's nothing worse than I can't lose to the Blues. And, you know, like I said, he really turned the game around. Pretty cool. Listen, I want to talk. Let's get to Blazing, Mags.
This is why I'm hot. This is why I'm hot. This is why.
Yeah, Blazing is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings, 215 in North Durango in the Montecito Crossing Plaza. It is a Hail Mary's pass from Centennial Hills Hospital. They've got two happy hours every day. And, of course, America's favorite place for wings, beer, and sports. We are there during the football season, which is now over with. So the next time I will be gracing Buffalo Wild Wings with my presence and our presence, we'll all be there Super Bowl Sunday as we do our live show there once a year, every year for Super Bowl Sunday. So we'll be there at that time. And I want to mention also this coming Thursday night, which is the 9th of January, we have our next Vegas Golden Knights watch party. It is out at the Centennial location, and that will be Thursday night. They host the LA Kings. That'll be the 6th of the 7 home games, and we'll be there celebrating and partying. So come on down, man. We're giving away, again, lower bowl tickets to a future Golden Knights game, and I believe the lower bowl tickets we're giving away will be to Saturday's game against the Blue Jackets. So definitely check that out. I'm going to let you guys start off your blazing because my blazing is going to segue into something else. So, Caleb, what you got, man?
Well, it's kind of tough for me because I would be remiss to not appreciate Derrick Henry for what he did to the Patriots and essentially ending a dynasty. He's had a great season, setting Titans records for most rushing yards in a for that franchise with 187, I think he finished with. Also, he went over 200 because he had a lot of receiving yards as well. He was their offense, essentially. So it's hard to not do that, but I have to give a nod
and
to...
And he's breaking records considering Eddie George was there, who's wearing Eddie a gold George, jacket.
He's a gold jacket guy. So, I mean, you think in the future Derrick Henry might be putting one on. It would be a bigger golden jacket because he's a massive human being. But, no, I wanted to go to something that I think is kind of cool. It's pretty interesting. Vince Carter. He's the first player in NBA history to appear in four decades of play. Which I just think is pretty cool, the longevity that he's had in a sport that's kind of cutthroat. He's not like just some guy that's riding the bench. He actually plays minutes for the Hawks now. He's played on a lot of different teams. But Vince Carter was responsible for a lot of memorable moments through the years, the biggest being his dunk contest, of course. Never got to the promised land and won a ring, so he probably won't be remembered for winning. But I just think it's pretty cool.
I'll tell you what, there'll be highlights of Vince Carter being played forever.
With his arm in the net, forever. For sure. Yeah. Vince Carter was one of the most exciting players of his time. When you think about him coming behind Jordan and Jordan, what Jordan was able to do dunking, I think Vince Carter, at least in-game, probably a better dunker than Michael Jordan was.
One of the greatest dunkers of all time.
Yeah, one of the most exciting players of all time. So cool that Vince Carter's played in all four decades, first player to ever do it. And he's not just some old guy. He's actually contributed, knocking down some big
players. Surprising, too, because like Kareem played till he was 103.
Exactly.
How did he not play in four decades?
That's crazy, right?
He started too early in the 70s to get to the fourth decade is what happened.
I just assume that Vince Carter has
probably
a lot of
played
kids
like in
or something.
Or he played like it started in like 89 or something, so that's what got him
he's
to
got
the
a lot of Vince Carter's still, got a lot of debt. He's just got to keep playing. He's not going to stop. He's got to stay employed and keep earning money.
A lot of mouths to feed.
But kudos to Vince Carter.
Hey, that's a pretty good one. Max, what you got for Blazing?
Well, I'm going to go with a rival of the Runnin' Rebels, the San Diego State Aztecs, who last night destroyed the preseason conference favorites, Utah State, handing them their second straight loss in the conference. Right now, San Diego State looking like they are the class of the Mountain West. They are undefeated, 15-0, 13th in the country, and I don't know if they're going to go undefeated, but right now they're looking like a team that's only going to have one or two losses at the end of the season because they do look like the class of the Mountain West. Now they still have to travel to Utah State, I think. But the job that Brian Dutcher's doing, I mean, a lot of times when you take over for a legend, and for San Diego State, Steve Fisher is a legend.
Legendary, yep.
I mean, he is the man responsible for that program even existing because before he got there, they were winning like six games a season. So when you take over for a legend, it's very difficult to follow in his footsteps. But Dutcher has kept the program completely relevant. In fact, in some cases, maybe even better. Don't know if they'll ever get to that point where they had the Kawhi Leonard year where they went to the Sweet 16 and were screwed because Jamal Franklin was called for a technical against UConn in a game that they were clearly going to win. But, I mean, San Diego State, I know Rebel fans don't want to hear it. They are the team
to beat this year in the Mountain West.
Not only this year, they are the premier team in the Mountain West Conference.
Yeah, you know, and they play in the two premier sports, football and basketball. They always seem to put a program together and a team together that competes for a conference championship.
Yeah, it really makes you wonder.
You know what they've had in both of those sports since you mentioned it? They've had the same person. I mean, Steve's gone now, but he was there and, like you said, built the program. He was there forever.
Oh, Steve.
Rocky Long's been there forever.
To be fair, when you have no history.
Steve Fisher was there. Their mascot was Dino the Dinosaur.
Yeah.
I mean, it was a
the Aztecs were still roaming the earth when he was
there. They were ruins that they were living in them.
the Aztec civilization was actually named after them.
I mean, that's how it was.
Mags, it's a good one. San Diego State really always has put together the good program. The only thing is with Dutcher, it's that look, that jaw thing that he does. I don't know what it's like. His face indents when he talks. I don't know how to. You know what I'm talking about, right? It like indents when he talks or something. But hey, I love the guy. He was an assistant at the University of Michigan when, you know, of course, the Fab Five were there under Steve Fisher, and then he moved.
Great,
He moved over here. If you want to talk about a guy, when you talk about patience and waiting in line, this dude stood in line for like 20 years to get a head coaching job, and he's making the most of it. So, Mags, it's a good blazing. My blazing is going to segue us into the next conversation, which is UNLV, and I'm going to give my blazing to the Runnin' Rebels because I was one of the people leaving them for dead to a degree. I mean, they lost to the ocean, When you lose to Pacific, for God's sakes.
The Pacific's doing good this year.
They're doing okay. And they got blown out by BYU, like destroyed. And then they lose to Pacific, but that game seemed to turn things around. And, you know, against Eastern Michigan looked like a high school playground team, but it also had something to do with the defense of UNLV.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the one thing I've noticed, Caleb, and I talked to Marvin Coleman and Amari Hardy, and we'll hear that in a minute, is defensively, this team is as, and I hate using the word suffocating because I think that's overstating what they do, but for them, it's been suffocating.
Yeah.
And yesterday, they turned off the gas at the beginning of the game, and Air Force, plus Air Force was hot from the perimeter early. But next thing you know, it's like UNLV had a timeout, and Otzelberger talked to him and said, here's the deal, and they came out and they started playing the same defense we saw him play against Utah State on Wednesday, and all of a sudden, they're on a 13-0 run again. And it's not so much that they're running and scoring points, it's how it's their defensive prowess. And Utah State, granted, Sam Merrill is hurt. I'm telling you, I don't know why they're not talking more about that, Chris. You know, this kid is one of the premier players in the conference, and he did not look like himself. They're also missing Cato, you know, Nemus, the kid that's probably the only NBA player on that team. So those are huge losses. But regardless, they're probably still a better team all around. Justin Bean, who is a really good player, was a great freshman for him last year. Played really well. That kid Miller, Brock Miller's a good player. They shut them down.
Right.
And, I mean, shut them down to where they were beating them by double digits most of the game. And I'm impressed. And I got to give them blazing for that. UNLV running Rebel basketball. I don't know how good they'll be. Right now, they're 8-8. They're at 500 overall. But they're 3-0 in the Mountain West and up top. And they just played, I think, Mags, in all of our opinion, the second-best team in the Mountain West Conference. And they didn't just beat them. They beat the crap out of them.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, the key is going to be what happens when they go on the road in the conference, right? I mean, that's what they always tell you about the Mountain West. It's winning games on the road. You got trips to Boise, trips to Logan, trips to, I think they already went to Fresno and won, right?
They went to Fresno and won. They're going on the road right away.
Because that was that weird conference game that was way too early in the season.
Yeah, it was like mid-December. Yeah.
They squeaked out a win, though.
They won it.
Yeah, well, I mean, but that's the thing. You know what? Keep up the consistency on the road. I'm still not sold on Otzelberger, but, I mean, it's a long season, and what I see from this team that I have not seen from previous UNLV teams, the team getting better as the season progresses,
right.
And that's obviously a good sign. So I think the team is going in the right direction. I want to see a little bit more. I want to see them win some games on the road in conference, and then we can start talking about the future, because I think right now this isn't a postseason tournament team, although I think if they end up with a 500 record, I do feel like maybe they will accept an invitation to one of those CBI.
I think the NIT, if they can end up a couple games above 500.
They're not an NIT team. They won't make the NIT.
I don't know. If they end up a couple of games above 500 and you beat teams like Utah State, I mean, the bottom line is they went to overtime with Kansas State. They were a shoestring away from beating Cal.
But you got to win those games.
Let's see what they do in the conference.
They won't
Chris.
Make the NIT. They're not an NIT team. I mean, because the NIT is taken.
The bottom line is they can beat just about anybody in the Mountain West, and if they fare well in the Mountain West and you get yourself, you know, 4 or 5 games over 500, you're going to get an NIT bid. I think especially...
I don't see it.
I think the focus should be how to finish in conference.
I can't even believe I'm talking about postseason with UNLV basketball.
I can't believe you are either. I mean, the way things started this season...
I drank some Kool-Aid this morning.
With the transition again happening, it's tough to see, you know, postseason success, but I think the way that the schedule starts up for them for, you know, the conference play, they're doing what they're supposed to do in conference. We can't speak for the preseason. There was a lot of stuff going on, suspensions, injuries to key players and stuff like that hampered them early on. But starting off undefeated in conference right now, the way that things shake up for the schedule, they're going to play the tougher teams, like you said, Chris, on the road late in the season. They got to go to San Diego. They got to go to New Mexico. Those are tough places to play in conference.
You know,
so they have to have a cushion, you know, right now early in conference play.
To be able to absorb a few losses.
Yeah, you can absorb some losses down the stretch. So that's, I think, they're setting themselves up to be in the mix in conference play. I don't know about postseason tournaments where they're going to qualify for, because I think they'd have to, like Max said, beat some of those key teams. If they pull out a win over San Diego State somewhere.
Well, listen.
I mean, not saying that that's likely, but if they do that.
That'd be huge. One of the things missing yesterday, nobody really talked about, was Donnie Tillman was not in the game. Last year's Pac-12 sixth man of the year, and he wasn't because he was late for the shoot-around. And no one really talked about it until after the thing. Someone said,
I loved it. What Otzelberg is doing is establishing a culture of accountability, and that's huge to me. And he's still winning doing it.
Yep.
It doesn't work.
Well, Air Force is a good team to go without Donnie Tillman again.
It's fine. You do it in the right spots.
Yeah.
But to be undefeated in conference, and you've sat Amari Hardy, you sat Tillman, you've sat a number of players for multiple games.
You've drawn
games
a line in the sand.
And you're still having success.
Yes, I like
so that. That says nobody's bigger than winning. Like, I can win without you. So you better come to play and be ready to play. That gets the most out of everybody in every aspect of things. Following the rules, effort on the court. If you're not playing defense, you're going to have a seat. That type of attitude now he's established while winning at the same time. Like you said, 500, but in your first season with what was expected from UNLV, I don't think anybody would have said they'd be undefeated in conference with a 500 record right now, with some competitive overtime losses along the way. So overall, it's a good first year for Otzelberger so far. Hopefully they can finish out with a strong record and a strong showing in the conference.
I agree, and I hope so as well. They got two games on the road this week. They'll be at Boise on Wednesday night, and next Saturday afternoon they'll be in Laramie to play Wyoming. It'll be a good little test for them on the road to see how they do. As I said, I got a chance after the game to talk with both Marvin Coleman and Amari Hardy, the two starting guards for the Runnin' Rebels, about this year's team, where they're at, and where they're headed.
Talking to Marvin Coleman and Amari Hardy, four straight wins in a row now. Where's your confidence level? Start with you, Marvin.
Our confidence is through the roof. You know, we know how we're supposed to play, and, you know, getting wins is obviously very important for us. So four wins in a row is very big for us.
I would say, you know, we know what we got to do at this point. We've proven we can do it. We just got to stay consistent day in and day out. No matter what the team is, we got to continuously show up each and every day, play hard, play together, and have fun.
What was the turning point? I mean, the low point, obviously, a bad game against BYU. Then Pacific comes here and beats you guys. It seems like something changed after that game. What was it?
You know, it was that game. You know, that message was clear. They came in our house, and, you know, they out-toughed us, out-rebounded us and everything like that. You know, that can't happen, especially on our home court. So that really turned the corner for us.
You know, defense is, it can't be overstated how big defense is in any level of competition. Your defensive prowess has picked up tremendously. Saw it against Utah State Wednesday night, again in the second half here tonight. What do you attribute to that, to this change where all of a sudden you have this defense intensity?
I would say we have to lock in mentally. Guys have to, you know, do a self-evaluation with themselves. You know, we all came together and said, you know, we all want this. We all want the best for each other. And I think, you know, when we had that conversation, you know, you saw a lot of things change on the court.
Amari, a different year this year, such a transition from last year to this year, new coach, everything else. What do you think about guys like Marvin and the other people that have come in this year and are really contributing the difference in this team?
A guy like Marvin, always stay ready, always stay prepared. So when he had the opportunity, he showed up and he's doing what he's doing now. He's playing phenomenal, he's playing good. You know, it's good to have him on the side with him.
Marvin, the potential of this team, you guys got it's all Mountain West from here on out, 3-0 in the Mountain West. I know that means a lot to you guys to start the season, but what do you look forward to going forward?
We're going to take one day at a time. You know, we're going to get better. We're not going to overlook any of our opponents, and we're just going to stick to what we do, and, you know, what we do should propel us to the top.
Last question, the road. You guys proved again that nice game up in Fresno to win that game, a close one on the road. Does that help you going forward?
I would definitely think it helped us being that, you know, we played a lot of road games, but not just that game, all the games that we played before. We had a lot of tough overtime losses, a lot of tough losses early on, and I think it helped us propel us to go into this next game to be able to pull out a victory.
Facts this. If you don't like the facts, take your ass back to bed. Fact this.
Fact. The New England Patriots will not be participating in the 2020 Super Bowl.
Yes.
This will not be Tom Brady's last season. And if it is not his last season, will the unrestricted GOAT be a New England Patriot next season, Caleb?
I doubt it. But I cannot see him in any other jersey. But
how is Robert Kraft going to not be loyal to Tom Brady at this point in his career?
Because
at 42 years old, just because he has loose skin and old balls,
loyalty,
he's not going to make him a quarterback for the Patriots?
Loyalty means nothing to a businessman, and that is why you are a successful businessman, because you're not loyal. You are business-oriented. It is not...
So Robert Kraft is going to give him a big wad of cheese and tell him to go somewhere else.
He'll probably send him and give him a great farewell party, retire his jersey instantly, things like that to pay homage to him. But when they look at this from a numbers perspective and what they want to do, the only thing that makes sense to me is paying Tom Brady a year contract that's dirt cheap and building and, you know, having a quarterback for another. But you can't invest anything in somebody who's this old.
Oh, I agree with you 100%.
They did him 100%. A favor. They did him a favor allowing him to finish out his contract and not trading him away. That would have been the most business thing to do, and not appreciating him and paying homage to him, is trade him before this contract is up. Because I'm sure you could have got some quality back for him last year or two seasons ago when you had Jimmy G sitting in as your backup. If I think Robert Kraft would have been a jerk and traded Tom Brady then and got a couple pieces back and kept Jimmy G as the future of the franchise, which I think, if when we look back at the history of the Patriots, when they go on this 10-year slump of not being in the playoff picture and not being in the Super Bowl hunt, when they go on that slump, we'll look back at that and say,
I disagree.
That's probably one of the keys to why they're going to
Would they have
struggle.
Won the Super Bowl last year with Jimmy G?
No,
yes.
I'm not, they would have.
I don't know about that. Tom Brady had a very good season last year.
I think the future looks a lot more, you know, fuzzy without.
I'll take one Super Bowl for 10 years of losing. I got 50 plus years of losing in Detroit. I'll take one Super Bowl for 10 years of losing.
But here's the other thing. Robert Kraft doesn't want to be Jerry Jones.
No.
So
he's going to listen and actually.
Yeah. At some point, Robert Kraft will realize that Tom Brady, and I don't know. I mean, look, it's easy to say he's done. I'm not sure.
At some point, the goat can't replace his hooves anymore.
Well,
right?
I mean, he's done. He's done when he says he's done. You know, and that's the thing.
He's earned that at least, and he's good enough to
a degree. At some point,
it's like the same thing with Peyton Manning. When Indianapolis Colts made the decision to move away from him, nobody could blame them at the time they made that decision.
Sure.
But with the neck injury and all that stuff. He's old. He's up there in age. It's like, okay, let's just call it good enough and get rid of you. Nobody could have predicted that he'd go to the Broncos, which was a complete team without him, had a great defense and great keeps, and go to two Super Bowls and win one. Nobody could have predicted that would have happened.
Peyton Manning did not win a Super Bowl in Denver. Von Miller did.
Yeah.
I have never seen a quarterback, he was slower than Trent Dilfer in his Super Bowl.
That's my point, though. If Tom Brady, in the same situation where you don't blame the Patriots for moving on and not resigning him to a deal. If Tom Brady goes somewhere, because he'll have his pick of the litter next year, if he goes somewhere where there's a complete team with a solid defense that he can just plug and play himself with receivers that don't drop passes on third down with 3 minutes to go in the game that cost you the game, Edelman, with things like that.
Yeah.
If he goes to a place that has a system, I don't think, though, that there is a place that exists right now that needs a quarterback.
I think there is.
Don't say the Jets.
No.
Because they got Sam Darnold.
No.
The one place that has what you're talking about is not the Vikings, but another team in that division.
Don't tell me the Bears. I know you're going to say the Bears. If he goes to the freaking Bears,
Tom Brady,
I am going to vomit for the next 16 years.
Khalil Mack, and then
Tom Brady. How many more times am I going to get kicked in the nuts?
Yep. I mean, they have.
Seriously.
I like it.
Mitch Trubisky is garbage. He's not winning anything.
I think you were doing garbage a disservice by calling him garbage.
All right, yeah, I mean, garbage is insulted.
Garbage could probably make some more plays than Mitchell Trubisky.
But I don't see Tom Brady going anywhere else. I think at the end of the day,
I agree with this.
Tom Brady will sit down and realize that. I mean, the thing is, at the beginning of the season, all we heard about was how great their defense was because people were overrating them based on the fact that they beat a lot of bad teams early on.
And this is what the Patriots do every year, though, because the AFC, their division is always
bad. It's garbage.
Like, it's
weak.
Always bad. So they just
Buffalo is changing that a little bit right now.
Come on.
Josh Allen proved why he's not ready in that divisional, in that wild card
Buffalo
game.
Buffalo was the recipient of playing a weak schedule.
Yes, exactly. And they got to the place where you should be able to play against better teams.
They played a weak schedule. That's why the Bills, they have a good defense.
Whenever you talk about a team with a suspect quarterback that makes the playoffs, and last year, a great example of that would be the Chicago Bears when they won 12 games.
This is my point. Defense
can make a huge difference, and we got glaring examples of that all over the place.
I don't know if it was on this show or where I was saying this, but I said that about the playoffs in general. I will never pick a team with a questionable quarterback. I think it was the show, actually. That team that has a question mark at quarterback to win the playoffs. All these teams that everybody's picked, the Niners, Jimmy G is still a question mark.
No, he's not.
I don't care. Well, no. Jimmy G is a question mark.
Yes, I think he is, too.
And when you're talking about winning, too. I'm not sure if Jimmy G is going to get – Russell Wilson, I believe in that guy. Aaron Rodgers, even though he's not had a great year, I believe in him to get the job done.
I agree.
The Dak Prescott's, the Carson Wentz even with – well, I shouldn't have said Dak. They're not in the playoffs. But Carson Wentz, he hasn't shown it to me in the playoffs. Carson Wentz, he showed me he's a winner, and I put more faith in him than I would say Jimmy G to win the game for me.
Kirk Cousins showed me nothing.
He showed me absolutely nothing. So I don't believe – Drew Brees, believe in that guy.
How can we not pick Drew Brees?
I wasn't going to pick against Tom Brady because I still believe in Tom Brady. Noodle arm or not, I believe in Tom Brady. He can still win you games, and he's done it. Yep. So his whole career –
Well, how are you not going to pick Tom Brady over Ryan Tannehill?
Yeah. So,
I mean, seriously.
So now you got – there's some guys that are involved.
76
Patrick
yards.
Patrick Mahomes is a guy that I believe
game.
In, but he just hasn't done it in the playoffs. Lamar Jackson, I believe in him, and I believe in – Baltimore's formula, but I don't know if he's going to get it done in the playoffs. Because the thing about the NFL that's unique and better, in my opinion, in some ways that I think the NFL has to keep because of the nature of the game, is this single game elimination of the playoffs. It could be anybody. So that makes it more spectacular that a team like the Patriots have had this
dynasty. I can't wait to get home after the show and watch the games. Yeah, and they're not even great matchups.
So that's why college football, I think, is a lot more because every week means something. So when it gets to the playoffs for the NFL, there's nothing like the NFL playoffs because every game matters. It means
NFL
something.
NFL playoffs take a and game the off. NCAA tournament are the two greatest sporting spectacles in this country. And I don't know which one I like more because I get totally used for both of them. Like this year, we set up a trip to Costa Rica for the first weekend of the NCAA tournament.
The only thing I would disagree with is I think that the NCAA tournament is too long. I think it's too deep. Like there's
because they're watering it down.
Those first two rounds are like I could go
without
them.
What is now the buy-in games? Where did you come up with buy-in games to add four more teams? Yeah,
but once you get, you talk at Sweet 16 on, you're glued to the NCAA tournament. If you're not, you don't appreciate competition.
Sports.
Like, you don't even have to like basketball. Like my wife, she thinks she knows basketball, and she'll sit there and watch it and entertain sports with me, but she'll be glued to the TV set for all of the game and not have a clue who's playing. Like what does that happen?
It's exciting.
And she'll celebrate and go crazy with it as if she's a fan of that team. And it's like you don't even know who George Washington, what was it, why do I want to say Carter?
George Washington.
I don't even know. Okay. Some Cinderella team that made it to the Sweet 16 and was like really exciting. Or like Wichita State getting to, and you don't know them, but she's like, you root for them.
No,
the Cinderella
stories. Florida Gulf Coast.
Perfect
example.
Those kind
example,
of teams that make it. Or like when Villanova won it, it wasn't like they were, like that game against North Carolina, those games will last forever. And like even if you're not a fan of those teams, and that's why I don't really have a college basketball team where I'm like super supportive of outside of the Running Rebels, but
you can't help
but you can't help but get excited for those kind of games. You
get excited for the tournament. Listen, we're going to take a real quick break. We're going to do a quick version of S&B with C, talking about the Raiders as they head into next season and what to look forward to with them. The college national championship game is a little over a week away. We'll try to squeeze some of that in. And, of course, we've got our picks of the week. We ended the regular season, but we always carry this through the postseason. So even though I won the regular season, I don't get to wear the crown until we get to the postseason.
Stop saying that.
You and Mags almost don't have a chance. The only one that I got to worry about is the kid over here, Ostrovsky. There, I said it again. I got to worry about him.
Now you're just showing off.
Yeah, Jameis Winston. My God, Mags. We'll talk about that. But what a way to end the most fitting season for him ever with a pick six in overtime to close out his season to make sure they had a losing record. I mean, garbage. Listen, we're going to take a break. Residential Bancorp Fox Sports Studio. This is Out of Line. I'm Brian Feldman. Caleb Herring's here. Chris Magnum Chapman, and of course, the Wiz are into. We'll be right back. Out of Line, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. Got a little less than 10 minutes to go in the show, and it is time for S&B with C. That's All About the Silver and Black with Caleb Herring. And after losing 5 out of their last 6 games and finishing with a 7-9 record, 16-15 was the score, an ugly game last week at Mile High Stadium up in Denver, which isn't called Mile High anymore, but I still call it Mile High. Caleb, what do the Raiders need to do in the offseason to make sure that they can make a legitimate run at the playoffs next year?
Number one is get healthy. I think they spent a lot of the year and really the whole season with some key injuries to players that they expected to contribute. I think they need to get Hard Knocks out of the locker room. They need to go into an offseason with no distractions, which is going to be hard because they're transitioning to Las Vegas. So I'm sure there's going to be kind of a media spectacle around that. They just got some bad news because their cornerback Lawson's going to be suspended for the first game of 2020. So I don't know if that's going to affect the season. But they also got to figure out if Derek Carr is the future at quarterback. And that is something that, you know, I think there's some things that they can do to make that so and for the immediate future to ride with Derek Carr while they figure it out. But you have to be all in on your quarterback position. I don't think there can be any sort of doubt. And that starts with ownership, making decisions based on who they have at quarterback. And I think instead of, you know, that constant swirling about who's going to replace him and things like that, I think you need to just focus right now on building a team around him that's competent and able to help him in his deficient areas. You need somebody that can make big plays that's not a tight end, and that's what they expected AB to be last year, but unforeseen circumstances led that to be a train wreck. So I think you need to go out and get him somebody that can make plays for him, because I think Derek Carr, at least for the immediate future, is your quarterback. And I think at some point the organization has to just accept that and stop with the swirling around of rumors of who's going to be the next guy. If you're looking at the landscape of quarterbacks, I think Derek Carr fits in with at least middle-of-the-pack quarterbacks in the league. He's not, you know, top tier, but you can win games if you build a solid defense around him and surround him with some playmakers. You got a running game with Josh Jacobs, which nobody really expected from your rookie. He comes back healthy, hopefully doesn't have a sophomore slump, has a good second season. You can build a winning team, a playoff team, in your division with the pieces that you have with Derek Carr as your quarterback. I think that's the immediate answer. Maybe not the long-term answer. I'm not saying he's going to win you Super Bowls, but right now I think he's the best that you can do. I don't think you could draft anybody better this year. I don't think you can trade for anybody better this year. I think you got Derek Carr, and you're going to ride with him for the next few years.
Well, I just pulled up somebody that the Wiz, who is starting rumors and started one at the Las Vegas Bowl, says that Jacob Eason will be the eventual quarterback, the next quarterback of the Las Vegas Raiders. And Jacob Eason, it was funny because his father's name is Tony Eason. So you immediately assume he's the old, they're not related in any way, shape, or form to the old Illinois and, of course, the New England Patriots that wet his pants in 1985 when they played the Bears in the Super Bowl. Not the same guy, but I did like Jacob Eason. I like his size.
He's not the quarterback for next season.
Okay, well I don't think so either, but again, the Wiz might argue with you. Guys can argue after the show on Facebook Live as to whether or not he should be the next QB of the Raiders. I'm not sold in any way, shape, or form that Derek Carr is the answer for this team down in the long run. I will say till the day I leave this planet that David Carr was the better Carr brother. He just got screwed and put in an awful situation, drafted number one by a true expansion team, and to this day I believe holds the single season record for being sacked more times than any other quarterback in history in a single season. And it made the kid gun shy, and it's really a shame because we never got to see what he could have been in the National Football League when you play in a team like that. I don't think there's any way to play your way out of a situation like that. The most thing he's famous for is being drafted number one and winning his first ever game with the Houston Texans. They did win their first game before they lost like all but one other game that season. But anyway, well, that's not the conversation now. Silver and black, I interesting. What I wonder is they're going to bring the black hole to Allegiant Stadium.
What's great is the stadium's already a black hole.
But I think they need to change the name. We don't want to be Oakland. We want to be something different. So how about if we go like the silver lining or call it something else? What else?
That sounds positive. The black hole was the perfect name, and that's what it should stay.
But that's in Oakland. That's at the Coliseum.
People were floating around the Death Star for whatever reason.
I don't know.
That works. But I think you got to be something dark and ominous. Because the stadium looks dark and ominous, like with the windows up, the black tint to the windows, which you need because it's hot in Vegas and, you know, you need the windows tinted out here. If you don't got window tint in your car, I feel sorry for you.
Call it the hole in the desert or something. I don't know. I mean,
Call it the abyss. Just
something. All right. Well, listen, we're pretty short on time. So what I didn't know, national championship, we'll get into that much more next week. Emily Van Busker, a good friend of mine, she was at the game at the Fiesta Bowl.
You got to hang out with her more.
You know, seriously, man. man. She was there, and she's pretty well astute with college football. We'll talk to her more next week. I think it's going to be a hell of a game. I think the week off was way bigger for Clemson than for LSU because Clemson's pretty beat up, and they definitely got to have their star quarterback. He has got to be healthy. If Trevor Lawrence isn't healthy, they have no chance of winning this game. This guy's going to have to make plays against a really stout LSU defense. But real quick, guys, to the pick segment. Two games yesterday, as we know. I think both games, neither one really surprising. I think we expected Houston to win. I think, yeah, a lot of people are shocked at New England losing that game, but they lost a week before in the same field to the Miami Dolphins. That should have been a red flag. I mean, yeah, you know, the beard comes out of nowhere and plays big in big games like that for him, but Ryan Fitzpatrick shouldn't be beating New England at home in a must-win game that gives them a bye. That should have been a red flag for all of us. Right. And then Tennessee comes in with the best running back and the best running game in football this year, and they beat him. That's simple. Today, two big games, guys, and you don't have to pick either one of these. You can also pick next week's games. I'm going to give you the lines. Tennessee at Baltimore, it is -10 right now, the early line. Houston at Kansas City is -8. So you got those lines to pick from, and then you've got the wild card games today. Seattle is -1.5, and you've got the other game, and that is the Saints are -7.5. Caleb, give me yours.
I'm going Saints in a blowout. Saints are going to destroy the Vikings.
Okay, Caleb's taking Saints. Mags?
I'm going Philadelphia at home.
Philly for Mags. Go ahead, Wiz.
This is an easy win for the Seahawks. Come on. What are we talking about here?
They showed last week that they're not as good as their record.
Yeah. And Mags is going to go with the Seahawks. And you know what I'm going to go with? I'm going to go with the Tennessee Titans. They are going to cover the 10-point spread. I think they'll lose, but they'll cover the 10-point spread in Baltimore. Hey, that's it. We're out of time, out of line. 8 to 9 every Sunday morning, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM, 1340 AM. I'm Brian Feldman. For Chris Magnum, Chapman, The Wiz, Caleb Harry, we want to thank everyone for being on the show. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Start your morning off with Dan Patrick each weekday from 6 till 9 a.m. on Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM and 1340 AM. We are KRLV Las Vegas.